Hey, leaders, listeners, and life's most curious people, this is Meaningful Mischief. Three entrepreneurs in pursuit of bringing our best, giving the most, and having fun along the way. No overnight successes, scaling hacks, or planning models here. Just a conversation about what we're learning and loving about meaning, impact, health, wealth, and everything in between. This is Meaningful Mischief. Let's jump in. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. We're here.
Hi, everybody.
James is with us.
Welcome, everybody. Thanks for listening.
We missed James last time, but he's back, and we have, this might be our final episode on relationships until we come up with another relationship we want to dissect. But this time we're going to talk about the primary relationship, our intimate relationship, our partner relationship, whatever you want to call that in your life and whatever it looks like in your life. And each of the three of us have obviously very different experiences. So we've talked about friendships. We've talked about the relationship with ourselves. We've talked about even all of our acquaintances and contacts and how we choose to spend our energy and our time connecting with all of them. But each of us has a primary relationship, that person that we maybe spend the most time with or have spent, I know for myself, my husband and I have been together for 27 years, married for almost 22. So there's lots of good territory for reflection and insight about what has worked and not worked and the journey of all of that, that I can certainly dig into and share. And how about you guys?
So I'm 21 years.
We're 8 years nearly together, 5 years married.
Awesome. So there we go. So maybe we should start at the beginning, which is, what made you choose this person to be with? Because I met my husband when I was 23. And I look back all those years and I say, there's lots about me that's the same, but there's lots that's different. And, what choices you made at 23 might be different than the choices you made at 50. However, here we still are together. So what made you choose your partner?
James, you want to try?
This is a really tough question, especially to answer live. For me, it was a feeling. I wasn't just choosing, I was choosing a life partner. So I was choosing mm-hmm. somebody that I wanted to be a mother of my children, to spend the rest of my life with, that I thought would support me, that I enjoyed spending time with, had fun with. We were aligned on most things. I don't think you can find alignment on everything. But we had alignment of the core values. And then as you spend a period of time, and we dated for a year or maybe a year and a half, we got closer, we traveled, we went through some difficult times, and then we just became closer where it was, this is the right thing to do. Yeah. And during them kind of good times and challenges and difficult times, the relationships that I had before, we grew apart. We weren't connected, we didn't see eye to eye, we fought when something, rather than something that could have brought us closer, it took us further apart. And for me, that was kind of an indication of, I don't know if I believe in, I think there is love at first sight. I don't know if there's love at first sight for a life partner. I think they're two separate things, because yeah. I think a love at first sight is an emotional driving to somebody that maybe physically or, communication-wise, you're attracted to them. But then there's so much more that goes into that, because you're basically getting into a business with another person that's going to, you're being tied in with kids or whatever. So,
yeah. Oh, I love this. Such good territory. So can I just ask the very, very beginning, like when you met her? Because at that point, you're not like, oh, you're still going to be the mother of my children. I'm curious about, because I can speak to about my husband too, but I'm curious to know what was
you
that.
You want to pick on me because I'm wide open and I talk.
Exactly. Now I'm all of a sudden feeling like whenever we start a podcast, I was like, how much do we have to say on this topic? And now I feel like we could talk for days about it. And so I'm like excited, but also don't want to overwhelm the conversation.
If, If you want to know, if you want to know this, these questions, Mary, you can just text me. You know, you don't have to ask me on the podcast.
I've been dying to know this whole time, and now I have the venue to ask.
go on. Ask
anyway,
away.
I was so just curious.
What's the question?
I was curious about that initial interest or attraction. Obviously, we need physical attraction in this world. So, I mean, let's just assume that that's a thing. In my own case, my husband and I were friends first. We worked in the same restaurant when we were going in university, and he was a friend of everybody. And so his last name's Poole, my last name's Farron, but people called him Pooley. And he was just this really fun and interesting guy, and smart, like so smart, and then also so kind and funny. And just every time I was in a group and like around other people, like we, you know, obviously that was back in the day when you're at bars a lot and hanging out with people, I would just always gravitate towards him because I was like, just, it was always interesting and fun. And so it evolved into a more romantic thing from there. It didn't start with, oh, see you across the bar, I need to date you. It evolved as a friendship and if I had to choose anybody in this entire bar to hang out with, it would be you. And so then it just naturally progressed into something more. So that's how it was for me. How about you guys? This is fun. I can't wait for you to answer. Because is that a very girl answer, by the way? Is that a very, like, oh, we were friends and then it evolved? Anyway. Feels like a girl answer, so let's do this.
No, because your answer isn't based upon kind of too much feelings. It's more pragmatic, a more pragmatic response.
Well, it's the I want to be around you, like in your presence I feel good, and I'm like, if I could choose anybody to be around right now, I'm gonna go be by you. And then from there it evolved into, well, maybe I could date you. So,
but that's what it always is. It's just feelings, right? Like if you get a guy who goes, I want to go on my motorbikes, or I want to go and play golf every weekend or evening, it's just a feeling, right? It's the feeling he gets when he's doing that and he's enjoying it and he wants to do more of it. It's the, you know, it's just a different, but for me was the same in that we had a friend in common. We actually met online, but had a friend in common. I think I told you the story before, but, and then we just started to hang out with each other, and we did have a friend in common, and we just enjoyed each other's company. But to the point where, as you start to get to know them, there's things that either attract you to them by being kind. I mean, for me, I'm attracted to people that are humble, kind, you know, can come up with different suggestions. The conversation flows both ways. It's just easygoing, fun, exciting.
Yeah,
and for me, that's how it started, and then we kind of grew, and then you traveled, and then you do, you know, you become closer. I've been on dates and things before where the conversation is always like, if it's me that's stimulating the conversation all the time and asking, and you feel like you're trying to get, you know, blood out of a stone, it gets boring after a while. She might be really attractive, you might be physically attracted to her, but that ends at a certain point when you feel like we can't take this to the next level in terms of a communication connection.
Yeah. There's nothing worse. There's nothing uglier than boring.
And for me, even, I remember going on a date once, I'll share this with you both, but I went on a date once with a girl, and we just sat down and I said, what do you want to drink? And she literally looked at the drinks list and picked the most expensive drink on there.
Oh no.
And it was like this champagne. I was like, you don't need to do that. And for me, that things like that was a massive put off. Like, no matter whatever comes after that, it's like,
yeah.
Anyway, how about you,
Steph? She's listening. I hope she's listening, that expensive drink lady. All right, Steph.
I manifested my wife.
Of course you did.
And I was the one that was love at first sight.
Oh, is that right? Like, where were you in the world? You were in Brazil, is that right?
No, we're in Greece. So I had just graduated optometry school. Okay. And here's the next section of my life. I was riding a high, right? Because here's this massive, you know, achievement. And now it's okay. School's done. Real life starts. And we had 3 months between when we wrote our board exams and when we could actually work. So now there's an opportunity to travel, which is what was always important to me. And we didn't have money. We hadn't even started working yet. So we have 5 weeks in Greece, 5 days in London. And we went with an intention to meet girls from London so that we didn't have to spend that much money in London because it's expensive. So
that's also a very business decision.
Yeah, I mean, it's sure financial. And then we were on a boat heading from Mykonos to Santorini. And here's these two gorgeous, gorgeous women that we happened to sit behind and tried to strike a conversation, and they had very limited English. And as soon as Fabi turned around, I was like, oh my God, like, she's gorgeous. Her energy was amazing. She thought I was loud and obnoxious, go figure. And they were also traveling, and because we could speak Greek, because I was there with a friend of mine, and also actually there was three other friends. One was a woman, and we negotiated a hotel so that they had a place to stay and then we had a place to stay. And that's kind of how it started. And then when we went back to London, she put us in an amazing hotel, took care of everything. I mean, we went out with her friends. We talk about fun now. I mean, imagine being with 15 Brazilians in that bar that you're talking about. It was just like fun on steroids, and just caring, making sure that we were safe. I mean, all these things. I'm just like, okay, I love her even more than I did at first sight, but she didn't want to have anything to do with me. Because she thought I was loud and obnoxious. And she even had a nickname for me, the Greek Olive.
Oh, wow. So
what's with the Greek Olive? She goes, when you have an olive for the first time, it's nasty and you just want to spit it out.
Oh, but then you acquire a taste for them.
And then you acquire a taste for them. So that took about 3 years of pen palling back and forth, which I was motivated.
3 years.
Because
wow.
I was
interested. Wow.
I was hearing about, and back then it was, you know, writing. There's no email stuff. And then again, talk about a conversation that was happening back and forth, as you know, what's new, what's going on. And then, you know, friendship, it was like a friendship because we had our own lives. I didn't think that I'd be with someone from Brazil, but what I realized is she's checked all the boxes for me. Right. And then the problem was now I know, and I had a comparable of what I wanted and all I would meet was what I didn't want. And then it came to a point where we went, okay, I know this sounds crazy, but, and we did a crazy thing. We basically locked ourselves in a cottage in Brazil. I went for the weekend, made a list of all the things that we wanted each, went through that list, and whatever wasn't in alignment, could we deal with that difference? Could we live with that difference? And the answer was yes. And that's how it started.
That is very intentional, my friend. Yeah. Yeah. So that like, so my story
these are like
is
Harlequin, Harlequin novels now.
Hardly, actually. I mean, you know, the partying with 15 Brazilians starts to feel a bit like that. But then you bring it back to, no, we met at a cottage. We made a list of all the things that were important to us. And then we decided, could we compromise on the things that aren't on, you know, that don't align. And so to me, that's
by the way, it was
very 15, intentional.
15 gorgeous Brazilian women, friends.
Yeah.
Let's add some color content.
Yeah.
Fun.
Yeah, bringing to mind movies and things like that. Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So that is fascinating that you did that because it is like, you know, much different than me just like, oh, this guy that I met in school hanging out at a bar, I guess we'll just spend time together. And then for me, literally, I just broken up with somebody who is not great at all. And my husband always makes fun of him now, but I was like, I probably shouldn't get into another relationship at this point because like, I literally broke up with a guy like a week ago. And that was, but then I said to myself, this is just fun. It just is fun and it feels good. And so I'm going to continue to do this until it stops feeling good. And then 27 years later, here we still are. It wasn't, and the interesting thing is, so about, and I may have told you guys this before, but like about 4 or 5 years ago, maybe a little bit more, we started seeing friends get divorced. We're at that age where the kids are getting older and there's a lot of divorce happening. And my husband's looking around at it and he's like, God, it's all the ladies that are leaving their husbands. And the dudes are completely shocked. They have no idea why this is happening. They're like, I mean, you know, I'm the same person I was when I was 25 or whatever. And so he realized, like, and he's commenting on, you know, maybe the women are growing and evolving and the men aren't in these situations. And so then all of a sudden, like anything I asked to do, like that year, it was COVID. And one of the coaches that I know in the world, a leadership coach, was holding a virtual Valentine's Day seminar for couples, which, if you know my husband, not in 1 million years would he volunteer to do something like that. But right around this same time, he's looking around, people are breaking up, and he I said, "Hey, do you want to do this Valentine's Day seminar? They're going to send us a bottle of wine and it's a workshop." And I mean, I'm into all these workshop things and self-discovery and all that stuff. He's like, "Yep, I totally. Yeah, let's do that." Do you want to read a book called Eight First Dates or whatever? He's like, "Sure." Everything I want to do, he was on board for it. So, I guess at that point there's a decision. As like our kids got older, there was definitely a decision around. And I'm not sure how conscious it was for him or for me, but how do we lean into this stage? Because there's so many years, like our kids are 18 and 20, and so many years where you're just like ships passing in the night, high-fiving in the hallway. My husband was really involved in our kids' sports team, so he was off doing that. And there were just, I can look back to seasons in our life where we're fine, like there was no major conflict, but we weren't close, like we weren't, enjoying each other the same way that we do. Like now we're more back into that moment of, well, it's just you and me. What do you want to do? there's more joy about this time for the two of us than there probably was for, like, I don't know, a good decade or so. Right? Anyway.
It's interesting because I do think that we get presented with key moments. And if you look back at that particular moment where he was playing this scenario in his head and he's saying, okay, well, this is what's happening around me with my friends, and I'm going to go and check in. But the fact that he came and checked in with you, because he could have just gone, oh, well, it's obviously, it's because of their relationship. We're good. We're fine. Gone off and done his own things. And then you grow wide apart. But he, had the intuition to come and address the situation and say, look, and then he was on board. So that sometimes them key things where you start to drift, but then you can bring it back together. And well, I think that the same with clients, with businesses, with friendships. Everything gets tested at a certain point, doesn't it? And we all have these key moments where it's only really in the future, I think we realize that oh, that was a key moment. We don't know it at the time.
Totally.
It's only until after the event, and it's either worked for you or it's gone against what you would have liked. And sometimes you can never bring it back, even though you might try, it's gone too far.
Totally.
Now I have a question, Mary.
Sure.
Why do you think all these women wanted the divorce and the men had no clue? Because my curiosity now is now like I'd love to hear your perspective on what you thought in that situation.
So I have to first say that none of the people are super close friends that I would have intimate conversations with and understand sort of the deep insight. Although I do have friends who have discontent inside their relationship, and so they'll talk about that. So I do have, but that hasn't, those ones haven't ended in divorce yet. So the way it looks to me, and based on my own experience of being through the childhood years and the two careers and all that stuff, the way it looks to me is that you, I'm going to bring it back to this lady named Helen Fisher. Do you guys know who she is? She's a researcher, psychologist, I think. She has a really cool TED talk on the three types of love. The first one is lust. And so like you and they actually put people inside like MRI scans or whatever to see what was going on in the brain during these different moments. So the first one is lust, and we need that to bring two people together. So it's super intense and you're riding the endorphins, and that's where you think it's love at first sight, right? Like that's the, but then that peters out. And then there's the attraction, the romantic love, which keeps the heat going for long enough to the point where you decide to be in a really like a long-term relationship together. And then the third one is attachment or that companionship. And so James, when you talked about that becomes more of a decision, like, am I going to partner with this person in life? Like, are they the person I want to build a family and a life with? That's a different level of love. So I think that when we get into that companion love, it shifts. It's not that new, exciting, crazy, obsessive time. It shifts into this companionable thing. And do you actually, after you go through all the stuff, it's like it's almost like you're on drugs when you first fall in love. Like you're just like completely obsessed and you're like, this person's everything. Like you forget, like you don't even notice the things that bother you. That goes away. There's a lot of other stuff. And so I think that in that companion stage, and then when life gets busy, are people truly friends and are they truly aligned with each other? And do they have conversations? Do they talk about how they feel? Do they, and are they interested enough? Because I could say for sure, I mean, I've definitely had times with my husband, I am more the, I know exactly how I'm feeling and I say it. And he doesn't have that same, like, he needs to think about it a little bit. So I could see even in our relationship where I'm having a conversation and I want to duke it out and hash it out and resolve it. And he's like, I'm just respond, I just need to now absorb it. I'm not ready for that. What that looks like to me in the moment is you don't care. You're quiet. You're acting like, when will this lady stop talking? Can I just go back to watching hockey or something? And in his mind, he's like, I'm kind of stunned. I don't know where this is coming from. I don't actually know how I feel about it. I'm not connected to how I feel about it yet. So it's not like he doesn't care, but how it's seen by the other party is different. And so I can see in a lot of places, if you're in a relationship where you have an issue and you want to talk about your feelings or talk about whatever, and someone, it seems like they don't care, they're shutting you down, then what do? You stop trying.
Yeah,
And then
of course.
you drift apart and all of that. So like, I know a lot of people who don't spend a lot of time together. Like they watch TV in different rooms. They have, social things with different groups of people. And then are somewhat still surprised that they don't have a good relationship. And so then by that point, you're like living separate lives in the same house. So, I mean, that's what it looks like to me.
Yeah, the reason I'm asking is so let me go back to, I guess, the opportunities that I had. Because Fabi had moved from Brazil, right? I mean, she came to Canada for me, which means that there's other things and she's close to her family, right? And I mean, we were in counseling really, really quickly in order to support what this list is that we created, right, on our own.
Yeah, so
And when we
smart.
work through it, there's obviously good and bad. One, it opened up the communication. But B, the reason why I was connected to her from the beginning is because we had values that were consistent. Family being one of them. Traveling was a big one. Helping, making a difference in people's lives. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that we were deeply connected to. But what ended up happening is going through the conventional ways of support systems, I feel didn't allow us to be individually expressed. And I'll explain in a second because, well, actually, I'll do it now. So we were fortunate that we did these personal development courses together for the longest time, and they were the best things for us. Why? Because we started realizing, and this goes back to the last episode that we did on the podcast of relationship with self. Okay, because ultimately, if you don't understand yourself at a deeper level, you're projecting on somebody else's expectations on you, right? So, and it goes to, even now with what you said with how you expect them to communicate. Well, if this is how you communicate and that's what makes you feel good, we automatically assume that the other person should be communicating in that language. And that's not the
Totally.
case, right? But going forward, okay, I'll step it through and then give you sort of the whole rundown. And we can have a communication further on this because I'm really, really interested in what you said because I found that there's a massive shift that happened in the time of COVID, a massive one. And I saw a lot of it in the office. So we had gone through all this personal development. We have unbelievable kids. We are both doing purpose-driven work, like a lot, right? And it was those learnings that we started to understand each other, which allowed us to stay connected. Now, the moment that changed was the hardest experience for both of us in our lives, which I've mentioned before. One was losing one child, and the other one was born early. That now it's a whole game change. Okay. For us, it was a total game change, but it was also the biggest opportunity. So at that point, there was a shutting down of the development, the personal development, because there was no time to do it. That's when I was introduced to strategic coach. So there was still some growth in my life, which is, again, what's important to me. And then that's how I discovered the neurovisual optometry piece, right? And we can do screenings on people to see if they have a sympathetic or stress response happening. And during COVID, I started noticing that at least 85% of the patients were showing a sympathetic stress response, at least that many. And it was at that point that I started noticing social media, this discussion around divorce, all these words were showing up, where there was this discussion about, am I really happy? Am I really fulfilled? Is this what's important to me? And then talking to the guy side of the equation, it was almost like a war was set up where they felt this obligation that they needed to work and make sure financially that the family was stable. And, this is what my experience was. So the question back to you was, I'm really curious to see, what was it, when was it that these conversations were happening? And now there's a blind side on the other side where one person in the unit has no idea and the other one's ready to go. So anyways, I'll leave it over to you guys.
I think that's a great question. And I just know from my own experience that those conversations could be as small as while you're emptying the dishwasher, or as big as, you know, I remember having a moment. I told you guys about my midlife crisis, where I said to my husband, what if I don't want this life? Like, that's a massive conversation and a big sort of bomb to drop between us. But then there's the little things where I'm not happy or something I'm dealing with, and I feel like he's not there and answering. And so it it's like a death by a thousand cuts, or the opposite, right? And so, you know, people, when they feel like, when you're putting your vulnerable self out there and you feel like someone's not there listening, the reaction is, okay, I can't bark up that tree again. I'm going to shut it down and go talk to someone else who, or nobody, and talk to someone else who will listen. I'm going to bitch to my girlfriends or whatever, or not talk to anybody at all. And I'm going to develop the tools or the armor I need to live in this situation the way it is, but not open and expressive. So I don't know, like, it's been 27 years. I don't know. I can't pinpoint. There's some big moments, but there are also a lot of little ones where I know that my husband is aware and engaged in making us work. And I think he knows the same about me. It doesn't always happen in unison. Like, there are definitely, last night I was talking to him because, like, he's been watching what he calls the best product in professional sports, the NHL playoffs. There's like 1 million games and they go on every day. Brandon and Simon are so into it that every day there's a hockey game on. I'm like, wait, who's playing now? Why do you care so much? Anyway, so in the last little while, like, we're doing things separately. And so I was joking with him. I'm like, it's okay, I'll just go over here and do this. So then it's not his team's playing last night. So he joins me, but he's exhausted end of the day. It's like an hour before bed. And I'm like, you know, there was nothing. He's just in the room on his phone. And I'm like, dude, like, you know, thanks, but no thanks. I'd rather watch some cheesy show on Netflix. You can carry on. We'll see each other on the weekend, kind of thing. So there's lots of times, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's lots of times where you don't connect, and to have that expectation of someone else is unreasonable too, I think. He and I do not get it right all the time. That is absolutely sure.
So James, I have a question for you.
Okay, shoot.
So just so everybody knows, before the call, we were just having a discussion, and James shared something, and it was very interesting for me.
Yeah.
And the reason being is I've experienced enough of conventional therapy. And I can honestly say, I don't think there's ever been a time I've been seen, heard, and understood except once. And we ended up finding out that there was a therapist, and man, like, I have to remember now. I just, it came to me, James, when you were sharing this morning, what the name actually was. And the approach that they, or that she took, was to explain, or at least to guide both of us in understanding how we grew up and what made us who we are in terms of the environment of our parents. Okay. And it was brilliant because it's helping reframe and understanding my personal development. So going back to the last episode where we talked about our relationship with self, it was liberating because now it's like, holy cow, that makes so much sense to me. And she was using tools so that the awarenesses came from us as opposed to being told, well, you know, statistics show that, and, you know, Freudian mentioned that, blah, 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 and the Jungian concept is blah, blah, blah. So how you should be looking at this is blah, blah, blah. Okay, there was an internal massive awareness. So I was intrigued when you brought up your experience, and if you're willing to share, I think it'd be great for the viewers, because what you said was exactly what I needed, and it did show up. The result was a little bit different, but do you mind sharing that? Because I think it's gold. It was gold for me, and I think it's going to be gold for the listeners.
Yeah, sure, sure. So we've had a lot going on, my wife and I, the last 12 months in terms of work and moving, house, kids. And as I've always been on this journey of, you know, what can I do to make our lives better or easier, or the situation, you know, evolve. And so my wife and myself, we agreed to go and see somebody because we just weren't seeing eye to eye in terms of some elements of communication and the ways in which we did certain things. So we went to see somebody, and who's in Abu Dhabi. And what was really interesting was that one of the first exercises that he got us to complete was to fill out two sides of A4 paper of just handwriting, and just to start writing. Didn't matter what we wrote, but it needed to be just something subconsciously that we just wrote without thinking about it, without really knowing why we were doing it. And then we handed him the sheets of paper, and we did it while we were both next to each other. We handed the sheets of paper, and he stood at it for about 2-3 minutes. And we thought, what on earth is going on here? And he just started saying, interesting. And then he told us exactly what as a result of looking at our handwriting, he told us exactly what our upbringing was like, what our relationship was like, where he thought that we would be having struggles, even before we started telling really anything like, why are we here or anything like this. And it was because what he's saying is that the handwriting is a direct reflection of what is going on inside your head. And what is going on inside your head is a reflection of your upbringing, you know, what's passed down from maybe grandparents, the way that you were raised, challenging times, fears, your relationship with love, or your relationship with money, your relationship with sex, emotions, all of these things, which then passes down into your handwriting. And then he started to explain to us why, which is to do with the spacing, the way that you do your G's, the way that you do your Y's, which represents the money in your heart, the slanting of the style of your writing, of your eyes, the T's. I didn't say this to you on our call. So the slanting is, if you're slant to the right, and depending on the degree of the slant, it means you have more empathy and you're more of a caregiver. If you slant to the left, it means you're more dominant, you're more selfish or self-driven, and everything's about you. The T's, the way that you do your T's and your I's is the relationship with your parents. So the top bar is your father, the bottom bar. So if it's slightly off or there's a gap, if you do your T and there's a gap between the line down and the top, then it means that there's been a breakage between you and your father and with the eye. And if it's slightly crooked to the angle, again, it shows that there's been an issue. And the same with the bottom of the eye is the relationship with the mother.
This is nuts, dude. And so you're sitting in there. All you've been asked to do is write. What were you asked to write about?
Anything.
But a page and a half.
Page and a half of writing about anything, stream of consciousness in the moment. You've done no, this man knows nothing about you or your relationship at all. And then he looks at it and he's able to describe the relationship in your marriage and the who you two are individually and to each other just based on your handwriting.
Yeah. And
That's
he's able to
nuts.
tell me the relationship that we would have had with our parents, the relationship with previous relationships where it might have gone wrong because of love, our relationship with money. And
Wow.
then what he would do is he would then show why, based on the handwriting, he would look at it and say, look, with my wife, there was potentially a disconnect with parents and these things because she was raised by grandparents. And
Yeah.
he would say, that's because it shows it in the way that you do your eyes. It's not like James's. So James, you were stable with the parents. Whereas with hers, and says, look, it shows in your handwriting. Insane.
It's
Yeah,
insane.
But it
makes sense.
Brilliant.
But
It's
makes
brilliant,
sense.
and it makes sense. And to put some context for the listeners too, right? Because sometimes it's easy to hear these things and going, that's woohoo. Come on, it's really, but it's science. It's actually science. Your handwriting is a external behavior. It's actually an output mechanism.
Of us, it's a representation of what's going on
100%.
inside the head.
What's going on in here? So if all of a sudden, and you know, whatever's happening, so you have the stream of consciousness that's happening in your head. You're writing about anything, right? Well, once you go into that state, then your handwriting also is going to be expressing, okay, what possibly you're thinking. Let's get this straight, okay? And this is why, you know, this guy's, it sounds like he's amazing what he does, because now he's not making assumptions on anything that he's experiencing. He knows what questions to ask now.
Yeah.
And he's asking the questions to understand. So again, I wasn't there. So did he ask you guys in terms of, I'm just curious, in terms of the relationship with your father, blah, 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 is this the case? And then you say either, okay, so now
exactly,
there's a mediator that's now having a discussion of your form of communication or expression, your wife's form of expression. And I think it's brilliant. I mean, I love this guy already.
I feel like, you know, I don't know how big our listener base is right now, but I feel like people are gonna be like, where can I submit my handwriting sample to this guy? So he could just
I'm
sit in the
thinking.
back room and assess things.
But imagine, because my handwriting, I look back at some of the stuff that my mum showed me, my handwriting's the same when I was like 10, right? So imagine if this was picked up in schools, where teachers could turn around, or someone could come into schools and say, look, what's going on at home? Because your handwriting is saying that you've got a bit of a disconnect here.
My
Like,
husband's
what's.
handwriting is an absolute hot mess. I can't even read it.
I am getting so excited right now. You guys have no idea. No, you what we're discussing right now, honestly, is what we do in vision therapy.
Well, I was
This
going to
is
say
what we
still,
do with the 6-year-olds, 7 and 8-year-olds. And this is the part that, you know, I call it neurovisual training, because I don't like the connotation of therapy, because you're enhancing the child's potential. Right. But imagine now, here's the 6-year-old with the handwriting, James, that you're talking about, right? But it's unconscious. You don't know. And some dude, when you're 40 something, is now evaluating your writing in a way to say, okay, well, let's talk about it now that we have to, because you're going through hell in a handbasket.
So,
well,
Steph,
can I just say one thing on that?
Yeah.
Can I just to follow on very quickly, that just in terms of reprogramming, because one thing that he's given us as an exercise to work on is saying that if you change your handwriting to fit what it is, it programs it back. Instead of it going from the mind down into the hands, you're now sending the message back up from the hands back into the mind to say, actually, I do have a good connection with money, or I do have this type of love in my relationship, or I'm going to repair it with my father, and I'm now going to start connecting my T's correctly. So he's saying you can reprogram that back up to the mind. So your mind then starts to go, oh, well, actually.
Yeah.
All right. Here we go. Can I just say one thing? This is personal now. Okay. So when I was learning about vision training, right, obviously I was there I was learning to help Gabriel. But what I realized, I can't help Gabriel unless I help myself. And one of the things that, because again, I have to eat my own cooking. So I'm going through, and one of the things is handwriting. Okay. And my handwriting is getting much better, but was illegible. The reason is because the way that my brain works is way faster than what my hand can keep up with. Okay, so one of my exercises was not just to write. Okay, it's to write in lowercase, not cursive. Okay, so lowercase, and I had to intentionally think about what I was writing. The other thing, in order to really slow me down and my thoughts down, I needed to write with my left hand, opposite hand. And what did that do? Create both sides of my brain to start functioning together, which then created an efficiency to slow me down in every way. And now what I'm hearing you say, James, is he now has the application, which I kind of intuitively knew we were impacting the kids, but it's intentional in terms of now writing in a way that supports what you need or somebody needs in terms of the relationship with mother, father. Fascinating. I mean, I want to know more. Like, this is really fascinating to me.
Me too. That's so cool. It makes me think of, we think that, our bodies are a reflection of our brain, right? Like we do, and we experience in our bodies what how we're experiencing, how we're taking in life. So, when I give talks on the topic, I'll ask someone in the audience, like, ever been pulled over by the cops? And then, somebody's like, oh yeah, like most people say yes. And that feeling, like you get pulled over, maybe you just ran a stop sign, maybe it was a totally misunderstanding, like it wasn't, he didn't do anything wrong. But you have like that adrenaline rush, like your whole body starts to sweat, your stomach's in your throat, your heart's racing. And that's an example of an event happening to you and you feel it in your body. The flip side is true. You can make an experience in your body to affect your life. But we don't think about it that way. We think about the body as just this sort of responsive vessel. But you turn on your favorite song, and we do this before meetings sometimes. I'll be like a virtual meeting. I'll be like, okay, everybody, turn off your camera, put it on mute, turn your favorite song on, dance like nobody's watching for 3 minutes, and then come
Priming,
back.
yeah.
Those like it's a completely different experience after that. So this whole handwriting thing makes so much sense, and yet I can't believe that it's not more popular and
Known,
prevalent because
well, no, yeah.
handwriting is a physical manifestation of your thoughts through your body, through your fingertips. Now I'm like, I don't know. I got to take a course on this or something. You guys want to go to a course on this? It's so cool. Okay, so now you have that insight. Are you going to start like closing the, no, wait, the why is keeping open because you're open, but like, what are the things that, like, do you have homework
No,
to
there's
go?
on the handwriting, So I've got to my Y's, I have to join up. My G's, I've got to join up. My T's, my I's. I don't want to change the slanting because I'm okay with where that was.
Yeah. That's so cool.
But
That's
yeah, my it
fascinating.
was fascinating. Well, yeah, I mean, my wife was blown away as well because she couldn't believe. She was like, "So you know all of this just from my handwriting?"
Well,
And
I'm
it would show
fascinated.
her where, yeah.
The I mean, there's two reasons why I'm fascinated. Number one, again, it goes back to the all our episodes in terms of relationship, but I feel like I'm connected to you at a very deep level. There's a part of me that wants me to tell you to open up that why even more because that's the gift I see in you.
The openness, is that the openness one? Or
Yeah,
empathy?
that's the openness one. But I find it fascinating because again, so the saying is the person with the most flexibility in behavior controls the system. Right? So if now, let's say the three of us know and do what we need to do to get those Y's and T's and whatever crossed in terms of, again, back to the episode last time to understand ourselves. I'm thinking, look how deep even these relationships with me and the both of you will be, and how enhanced they're going to be in terms of where we're going and what we're doing. I mean, this is fascinating at many, many levels for me. It was amazing. But
So
thanks for sharing,
is.
James. That was awesome.
Thank you. And then it just
Oh,
makes
my
me think because
pleasure.
we have to wrap up this episode.
Oh,
But I
man.
feel like we're like, I don't know, a third of the way through the conversation. So let's think about if we bring this back to a follow-up, maybe there's some other dimensions of the, yet this most important relationship in your life. Second most important, the first one being with yourself. Maybe we come back to it and think about some other angles of this we can talk about, because we just barely scratched the surface on this super cool topic. Sound good?
I mean,
definitely.
I mean,
All right,
I'll
guys.
dig out the guys, and we'll
Yes.
put it in the notes. We'll dig it out and put it in the notes for people to click on
Amazing.
and have a look at it. I'm sure there's many other people around the world that's doing it.
Yeah.
And the
Happy
other, the only
handwriting, everybody.
one more thing before we go, now that we're on the relationship topic, and if it's of interest to the listeners, personal relationship tends to be the most difficult to understand in terms of who you are, or the handwriting in this case. And then the other two most difficult is relationship with mother and father. I mean, and the biggest opportunities to look at it from
Yeah.
the positive standpoint. So, yeah, this
Let's
is
do
cool.
it. Love it.
Let's do it.
Thanks, everybody. Have a good one.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
And that's all for this episode of Meaningful Mischief. If you found value in today's conversation, you can subscribe wherever you podcast. And hey, spread the mischief yourself. You'll find all the links in the show notes. You can visit us at meaningfulmischief.com and follow us on Instagram at meaningfulmischief. Until next time, keep making meaning and have fun while doing it. This is Meaningful Mischief, signing off.